The title of this series is Finding Peace in a Chaotic World. And how many of us know that the world is a little bit chaotic nowadays? Not just the world in general, but our worlds can sometimes be chaotic. And there has to be a way, there has to be a way for us to find peace. There has to be a way for us to have that under control. And God has given us a way for that to happen. And our pastor started out 2 weeks ago in talking about rejoicing in the Lord. And again, we say rejoice. The Bible says that. And all we got to do is just, you know, spend time and take time to rejoice in the Lord. The last week he talked about the sovereignty of God. Right? God is sovereign. God knows why things happen. We can't explain it. We don't understand it sometimes. We have no control over it. God is sovereign. He's going to do what he wants to do. And we have to rejoice in that. We have to take solace in that, knowing that God has a plan and he knows what he's doing. Right? The creator of this universe, the creator of this world, knows what he's doing. And though we don't understand it, sometimes we might not agree with it, we got to trust God and know that he has a plan. We got to trust and rejoice in his sovereignty. And this morning, we're going to talk about rejoicing in his mercy. Right? God has mercy out there for us. And it doesn't matter what you've done or where you've been, his mercy is great. But I want to start out first with reading our text that we've been reading. We're going to just follow along with it and just kind of keep it in the forefront as we go through this series. And it's found in Philippians chapter 4, verse 4. And it says, "Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will guard your hearts, your minds, in Christ Jesus." So we started out with rejoice in the Lord always. Right? We always want to rejoice in the Lord. It'll pass. It'll go away. We always want to give thanks to God in all that he does. And this morning we want to give thanks to God in his mercy. Rejoice in the mercy of God. And God's mercy, if you look at the definition, or my definition, is a love that responds to human need in an unexpected or unmerited way. God's mercy is love that responds to a human need in an unexpected or unmerited way. Right? There's nothing that we can do to earn God's mercy. There's nothing that we can't do that he won't show mercy upon us. Right? It's unexpected. It's unmerited. We can't explain it. We just know it's there. And I'm grateful and I'm thankful that that mercy is there. And at its core, that mercy is God's forgiveness. His forgiveness of what we've done or what we'll do or how we've acted. That's what the core of that mercy is that forgiveness. And that forgiveness is always there, no matter what we do. No matter what sin we commit, God is always there to forgive us. Now, that doesn't give us a license to go out and sin, right? And say, oh, God's going to forgive me anyways. I can go out and do what I want to do. That's not what he's saying. But as humans, as mankind, we have that sin nature in us. And as hard as we may try, we're going to slip up. I slip up. And when we do, we got to know that God's forgiveness is there, his mercy is there, that we can run to that. Because if we don't resolve that sin, guilt will start to set in. Right? And then it just compounds, it gets even worse after that. Because we feel guilty about what we've done. We know we've sinned, we've messed up, now we're starting to feel guilty. And that unresolved guilt is going to lead to anxiety. Now we're going to be anxious about things, we're going to be upset about things because why do I keep doing that? Why do I keep messing up? I know I shouldn't do that. But you don't want to get to that point. We don't want to get to that point. We want to trust in God's mercy and know that it's there for us. And that guilt, that anxiety, that sin, you know, it's been that way since the very beginning. Since the very beginning. If we look at humanity's first family. I'm not talking about the presidential White House first family. I'm talking about the first family here on earth, Adam and Eve. If we look back and take a look at them, They had it great, right? They were in paradise. They had all they ever wanted. They had all they ever needed. Adam can go and hang out with a lion and sit down there and rub his mane and hang out. No fear of that lion attacking him. They had all that they ever wanted, all that they could ever ask for. Life was perfect in that garden. Now, sometimes we think our life's good, our life's going perfect, but theirs was perfect. There was no hate, there was no animosity. They got along, they never fought. They didn't argue over who was going to pay the bills. They didn't argue about what was for dinner. It was peace, it was perfection. But then they blew it. They blew it. You see, God wants to give us a chance to make choices. He doesn't want robots. He doesn't want people who blindly follow him and just lead after God. I'm following God. He wants us to choose him. So we put a test to them. He gave them an opportunity to choose him. And they blew it. Right? They chose to eat the forbidden fruit. They chose to disobey what God did or what God said not to do. They chose to disobey that. And the second they did that, their lives changed. The peacefulness and the tranquility of that garden changed. And now they felt sin. Now they felt fear. They felt afraid. They felt ashamed. In fact, in Genesis chapter 3, it says, and they heard the sound of the Lord walking in the garden in the cool of the day. And the man and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord among the trees in the garden. They were hiding from God. They hid themselves. Right? They knew they had done wrong. They knew they had sinned. They knew they messed up. And instead of, you know, going to God the Father, they went and they hid because they were ashamed. They were scared. And they hadn't felt this type of fear. They didn't know what this was about. Right? They hadn't had these feelings of ashamed or trepidation or feeling afraid. They had no idea what that was like. And now they do. Now they're trying to deal with all these emotions and all these feelings. And I'm sure guilt's starting to build up and anxiety's starting to come into their minds. And I can't imagine, maybe even the animals kind of changed their progression, or even the roar of the lion might have gotten a little fierce, right? Or the roar of the tigers weren't just a nice purr, now it was an angry purr. I think just the whole atmosphere, the whole feeling of the garden changed because of that choice that they made. And they were afraid. And then here comes God, a little later, here comes God in verse 9 and 10. It says, but the Lord God called to the man and said, where are you? Like he didn't know where they were. Right? Like he's really looking for them. He goes, where are you? And he said, I heard the sound of you in the garden and I was afraid because I was naked and I hid myself. They were ashamed. They were scared and they hid themselves from God. Right? They probably sewed some little, you'll see all the pictures of them sewing little fig leaves to cover their parts of the body. And I would need a big fig tree to cover. I just don't want nobody to see me. So, you know, and I'm sure that's just something. We just want to hide ourselves. We want to hide from God. We want to run from God. But what does God want us to do? He wants us to come to him. He wants us to go to him. He wants us to trust in him for his mercy and not have to deal with the guilt or the pain that they went through. Now, a lot of you, some of you might know, or most of you might know a little bit of my story, but I'm going to share a little bit more today. I was saved in the seventh grade. So I was about 13 years old, and I grew up in the church, and thankfully I haven't had the addiction problem or the sinful problem or anything like that. I've grown up in church practically my whole life, and I'm grateful for that. But there was a time where I had to deal with some guilt, or me and my wife had to deal with some guilt, although at the time she wasn't my wife. So we met in our youth group, and we started dating, and you know, young love, it was all happy and it was good. And we would talk for hours on the phone when there wasn't texting and you had to actually talk on a phone. And you had the long cord that went into your bedroom so you could have privacy. You guys know what I'm talking about, yeah? And it was great. It was fun. We were getting to know each other and we got along. And we would talk on Monday, Tuesday. We'd see each other at church on Wednesday. And we'd talk on Thursday and Friday and Saturday and see each other at church on Sunday. So we talked all the time. It was great. Life was good. Until her dad found out about me. Now, her parents were separated. Her dad wasn't going to church. He wasn't saved. Her mom was, and she went to church with us. But I'm a little older than she is. I'm not going to say how much older, but we'll just leave it at that. So he found out I was a little older than her, and he flipped out. He got mad, and he said, "You need to stop seeing this creep of a guy." He didn't even know me, right? Yeah, no, I'm a nice guy. Look at me. I'm sweet. I love God. I don't want to do anything bad, but he didn't even give me a chance. He said, "No, not going to see him." So he said, "You need to break up with him." And this kind of went on back and forth, and he would yell at her, and she would, you know, argue back, and this went back and forth. And finally, her mom kind of stepped in and said, "Hey, you know, you need to respect your dad's wishes. You need to do that. You need to break up." And so they left that in our boat, and we said, "Oh, okay." But we didn't really break up at that point. We told her mom that, yeah, we would do that, but we really didn't. I would still sneak over to her house to see her. Her mom would leave on a Monday night for Bible study, and I'd be parked around the corner, and as soon as I see her Buick go down the street, I'd get out of my car and walk over to the house, come in, and we'd hang out. We'd talk, or we'd, you know, watch TV. Her brother would sit there on the couch and see me come in, and he'd leave and go hide in the bedroom because he wanted no part of this, right? And so we thought, oh, yeah, this will work. We see each other at church, and we'll see each other here on Monday nights when her mom goes to Bible study. And, you know, you start to wonder, well, wait a minute, is this right? We were disobeying our parents. We're disobeying her parents and the wishes of her father. And that guilt starts to settle in. It wasn't a huge sin, but we were disobeying her parents. We weren't honoring what her mom and dad had asked for. And, you know, thankfully, I never got caught. Her mom never came home unexpectedly. Oh, Bible study was canceled or it was cut short. That never happened, although I had a plan just in case, right? I knew I could get out the back door. I knew the side gate. I could jump it real quick and run to the car. So I wasn't dumb. I had a plan. Thankfully, I never had to use that plan, right? But that guilt, that anxiety started to set in our relationship. And so we broke up. We broke up for reals. And that was tough. You see, when we feel guilty about things, we start to feel like a failure about things. And God hasn't created us to be a failure. He doesn't want us to be a failure. And then when that guilt, that anxiety, all that stuff starts to settle in, you know, we start to deny the sin. We start to deny what we're doing. We pretend it never even happened. We ignore it. We said, oh, I didn't really sin. That wasn't really me. We minimize it, right? It wasn't such a big deal. It wasn't a huge sin. It was a slip-up. It was a mistake. It was a lack of judgment. Or we start to minimize it. Or sometimes we'll bury it. And we'll just suppress it and put it on the back burner and take it off the stove and throw it outside and just forget about it. Or we'll avoid it. Or sometimes we'll punish ourselves for what we're doing. We'll beat ourselves up. Say, man, I need to be more holier, or I need to pray more, or I need to worship more, I need to go to church more. And that's not what God's looking for. That's not going to resolve the anxiety. That's not going to free you of the guilt. That's not going to help you through those situations. So none of that works. In the book that this whole series is coming off of, Max Lucado writes, "Behind the frantic expression on the faces of humanity is unresolved guilt." So at the core of our frenziness, at the core of our anxiety, there's that unresolved guilt that we need to be with, or that we need to deal with. See, what kind of person does that unresolved guilt make us? What kind of person does that unresolved guilt make you? Probably a little bit more anxious about things. You know, you really don't have that peace that's inside you. You don't have that peace that dwells within you. You're always hiding, right? You're always trying to cover up that sin. You're always trying to distract yourself from it or keep it away, out of sight. Or we pretend it never even happened. So no, that didn't happen. Just ignore it. Just move on from that. And how does that work? It doesn't. It doesn't work. It doesn't help you resolve anything. See, unresolved guilt is going to turn you into a miserable, weary, angry, upset, stressed out, fretful, sad-looking, gray-haired, wrinkly skin, eyes sagging under the eyes, you know, kind of a person. Now, thankfully, I don't see anybody here this morning that fits that description, so we're good. But cover-up can cover up those eyes, I think, so. But we don't want to be that people. We don't want to be that person. You don't want to be weary or anxious or upset, always looking over your shoulder, wondering, you know, what's going to happen next. We want to be that person that's confident or that's free of guilt, knowing where they're going, trusting God for our future, and moving forward in it. David wrote something pretty interesting, and this is probably about right after he had that slip-up with Bathsheba. And he writes in Psalms 32, it says, "For when I kept silent, my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long," or through my groaning. "Through my groaning all day long. For day and night, your hand was heavy upon me. My strength was dried up as the heat in the summer." Well, we know about heat in the summer, right? We can experience that. And how many of us want to be dried up like that? You know, you look at a plant in the middle of the summer, it has had no water, and it's just withered there, and it's just brown, and there's no life in it. It's dead. We don't want to be that dried up person. We don't want to let that guilt settle in so deep that it dries you up to the core. We don't want to be that person that has no hope, that has no life, that has no future. We want to be able to deal with that guilt. We want to be able to resolve that guilt. See, guilt and anxiety sucks the life out of you. It sucks the life out of our physical bodies, and it sucks the life out of our souls, out of who we are. It changes us. It's not who God intended us to be. Right? God intended us to be someone who's has a passion and a heart after him and is longing for him. Not this dried out, baggy-eyed person who's just weary and stressed out. He wants us to have life. He wants us to put that cover-up makeup company out of business and not go there at all. See, God's mercy restores our soul. God's mercy restores our soul. Remember, the definition of mercy was love that responds to a human need in an unexpected, I don't know why I picked that word, it's hard to say, unexpected or undetermined way. That's what God's mercy is. You know, and there's no better picture of that unexpected or unmerited mercy than that of the Apostle Paul. Right? We just need to look at the Apostle Paul's life and see God's mercy. See, Paul clung to that mercy. He held on to it. With the same degree that he believed in God's sovereignty, he relied on God's mercy. See, Paul knew who God was mentally. He knew who God was because he was raised up in it, but he didn't know God in his heart. He didn't have that relationship. And no one had more reason to feel the burden of guilt than Paul did, right? Because of the things he did before, right? He orchestrated the death of many Christians, right? He was like a terrorist to the Christian community. He went after them. He sought them out. He tried to destroy them. He would take believers into custody. He would spill their blood. He would do everything he did, everything he could to stop this move of Christ, right? And go back to the old ways, the old Jewish ways. He was on a journey with tenacity and with fervor and with aggression to do all that he could do to wipe out these Christians at that time, these believers, these followers of Christ, because they were wrong. So he believed. Acts chapter 8 says, but Saul was ravaging the church, and entering house after house, he dragged off men and women and committed them to prison. Saul had no mercy on the church at this time. He was going after them. He didn't care if he dragged those parents out and left the kids behind. He didn't care about anything about that. He just knew that he was on a mission and he had a job to do and he wanted to get it done. You see, Paul was a legalist to the core. See, he was brought up in a Jewish household, and he had the Jewish initiation ceremony at 8 years old. And I'll let you guys think about that, what that is. You guys know what that is. I'm not going to talk about that. I like talking about that. It's painful. But at 8 years old, he had that Jewish initiation ceremony, right? He was from a pure-blooded Jewish home, from the lineage of the tribe of Benjamin, a mighty tribe from the old time, from way back when. And he was like a real Jew if ever there was one. He was raised in a Jewish household. He had the pedigree to back it up. He was like the Jew that was at the top of the line. He was the perfect Jew. And he spent all of his time trying to save himself. That's what he was doing. He was trying to earn his salvation through following the law, by being obedient to what the Pharisees had said, and to acting upon or doing all these things and cleaning up the house like he thought God wanted him to do. He was trying to earn his salvation. See, because his salvation depended on his perfection. If he was a perfect Jew, he kept all the laws. He kept all the commandments at the time. He followed all the ceremonies and the feasts and the rituals that would go on. He kept all those. He followed them to the core. He wanted to earn his way into God's blessing by his performance. But here he is, Paul, right, who had blood on his hands, but yet had the religious diplomas on his wall. Now, if there ever was a contradiction, there it is right here. But Paul was 100% in. He was all in. He was gung-ho. He was sold out, and nothing was going to change his mind. So he thought. Then the Damascus Road moment happens. And he has an encounter with Christ that knocks him flat on his backside, knocked him off his horse, and changed his life forever. I know some of us in here might have had that encounter with Christ where it knocks you off your horse and changes your life forever. And that's good. It's a good awakening call for us. It's good to see who Christ is and what he wants for us. And this happened to Paul. So now he couldn't see physically, right? He couldn't see the value in his resume and all the things that he was accomplishing. That had no more value to him. He couldn't see merit in his merits or what he was doing. And he couldn't see worth in his works. See, Christ completely changed his viewpoint and his mindset 180 degrees to the mindset of what God is. And that is compassion and love and forgiveness and grace and mercy. And it's how we live from that point on. He held on to God's mercy because he knew of his past. Couldn't change it, couldn't do anything about it. Couldn't make up enough do enough amends to even out the score. But he knew God's mercy, and that God's mercy is the only thing that can cover it up. God's mercy is the only thing that can make us even again. God's mercy is the only thing that can make us right to be able to stand before the Father in heaven. It's his mercy. Nothing we can do, not enough I'm sorries or enough penitence or enough, you know, repeating of things, we'll do it. But it's God's mercy that he gives to us. Unexpected and unmerited is what his mercy does for us. It changes our lives. And Paul knew it, and he lived it. He wrote in Philippians chapter 3, verse 4, it says, if anyone else thinks he has reason for confidence in the flesh, I have more. Circumcised on the eighth day, of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, as to the law, a Pharisee, as to zeal, a prosecutor of the church, as to righteousness under the law, blameless. But here's the key point right here. But whatever gain I had, I counted all loss for the sake of Christ. Everything he did before, it's for nothing. It's a loss. Because Christ came in and changed his life. Christ transformed his mindset. Christ made him into a new creation. And Christ changed his name from Saul to Paul. Right? How many of us would like that when we get changed, that we would change our name? Right? That might be a good thing sometimes. You don't have to worry about what the old Lawrence did. I'm the new Lawrence. I'll be Lorenzo. But then that means I have to say Jesus Cristo. But it'd be a change. It'd be a difference that not only you know, but everybody else would know. And I'm sure everybody knew of his change. Everybody knew of his transformation. Because everybody knew who Paul was. Saul at that time. But they knew who he was and what he stood for. You know, they'd hear him coming down the road and they'd run for the hills and hide and get out the way. And I'm sure at first people still did that. They didn't really trust. They weren't really sure if this change, transformation was true. Maybe it was just a ploy to get him in here, then he'll round everybody up and take them off. But it was true. It was a pure transformation in his heart. And that guilt, all that guilt that he carried was released. It was released by God's mercy. He didn't try to numb it. He didn't try to subdue it. He didn't try to hide it or deny it. He didn't try to push it off. He simply surrendered to God's mercy. He simply gave in to all that God had and chose, I'm going to follow this God. Later on in Philippians, that same chapter, he goes to say, brothers, I do not consider that I have made it my own. But one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and straining forward to what lies ahead, I press on toward the goal, the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. He forgets what he had behind him, and he presses on to that goal. Does he say it's going to be easy? Nowhere does he say that I press on to this easy goal that God has set before me. He doesn't say that. He says, I just press on to this upward call that Christ has. Sometimes we got to press on. Sometimes we got to wade through the muck and get to where God has called us to go, where he wants us to be. But the key part is that we got to forget our past. We got to leave that behind. And I know that's a lot. It's easier said than done sometimes because, Pastor Lawrence, you don't know what I've done. You don't know where I've been or what I've said or how I've acted. You're right, I don't. But God doesn't care about that. He cares that you move forward in him. He cares that you trust in his mercy and hold on to that and forget about that. Don't forget it where you forget how you acted. Don't ignore it. You mean, know that I don't want to be that same person I was, but don't let it hold you back. Don't let that guilt of who you were hold you back for what God has called you to be, because that's something greater. And Paul lived that out. He forgot about all that stuff that he did because he wanted to be greater. And he could be free from guilt because he trusted in God's mercy. See, we need to be aware of the severity of sin. We need to be aware of the sin. But we got to be aware of the immensity of God's grace and mercy. Man, that's so huge. God's grace and God's mercy is unfathomable. There is no way we could ever understand it. There is no way that we could ever explain it. How God can forgive us for what we've done, how we've acted, or where we've been. But we need to trust and believe that when we do come to him, his arms are going to be open. And they are. They're going to be open. No matter what we've done, his arms are going to be open. And his mercy is going to be right there. Unmerited mercy for you. We got to move forward in that. We got to trust him in that. We got to walk in that. And when we walk in that mercy, when we walk in that peace, it's amazing how your life changes and how things get better. and how God restores you. It's amazing. Going back to my story, we had broken up. And, you know, in high school, that's a big deal. It's a big deal to break up. Because we still saw each other at church. We didn't stop going to church. We still saw each other at youth events, at things we did outside of church. But we broke up for 6 months. Thank God it wasn't longer than that. We broke up. And finally, her mom came around and her dad came around. Her dad got to know me or met me and loves me now. He says, I'm the greatest son-in-law he ever has. I'm the only son-in-law he has, so I guess he can say that. But he says, I'm the greatest. But I believe it's because at that time where we honored the wishes of her parents and we gave in to what God was calling us to do, that has brought us to where we're at today. Right, next month or in March, we'll be celebrating 28 years of marriage. Right? Yeah. And 5 of those years before, we were, okay, 5.5 years, because that's 6-month breakup period. 4.5 years, right, we dated. So we've been together a long time. And just to look back and see the blessing that we have of all of our kids, of our grandkids, of our daughter-in-law, and what God has brought us through, man, I wouldn't change that time for nothing. But it's because we respected her parents, and we gave in and we obeyed God. And we gave into that. Our life is a lot better now. And we are where we're at now because of that. I truly believe that. God's mercy was upon us that whole time, and his mercy is still on us today. Right? With 8 kids, you gotta have some mercy somewhere. Good Lord. And I think the best part of his mercy is when he gives us a grandkid, because there, you know, you can spoil that little kid, and then, here you go, Dad, take him back, he's all yours. Oh, dirty diaper, here you go. Right? But we believed and trusted in God through those years when we were apart, and we still believe and trust in God now. You know, God has so much for us. He has a huge plan for you, right? Jeremiah 29:11. He's got great ideas for you. But we got to trust God with that plan. And sometimes it means, no, you got to take this road. But no, Lord, I want to go this road. It's funner. It's a better job. It's more money. No, you got to go this road. Because later on down the line, we don't know it, but God knows it. He's got this road for you, and it's going to bless you even more. So we got to trust God. I don't know. I don't mind trusting the God who created the universe. You know, I think he knows what he's doing. I think he's got a good plan. And like I said, it's a lot easier said than done, because, you know, we sometimes want to help out God and tell him what's best for us. Like he needs our advice. But we got to trust him. We got to follow him, and we have to rely on his mercy. Romans 11, verse 32 says, "For God has consigned all to disobedience, that he may have mercy on all. And oh, the depth, riches, and wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are these judgments, and how inscrutable are his ways." How unsearchable is his knowledge? God knows what he's doing. And his ways are unscrutable. You can't change his ways. His ways are knows what's best for us. And when we trust in those ways, and when we trust in that the knowledge that he has, and we free ourselves from the guilt and from the anxiety of, oh man, I should have done better, and we let his mercy come upon us, what a life we can have. And I'm not saying we're going to get the mansion on the hill driving the Bentley and, you know, all that fun stuff. But inside, you're going to have peace. Your mind's not going to be exploding with all kinds of different ideas or anxiety or anything like that. The bags under your eyes might shrink up a little bit. And you're going to just feel that, hey, this, you know, minimum wage job that I have that we barely make it on, it's okay. Because I'll be still able to put food on my table. I'm still able to help out. And this job that my boss is always yelling at me, it's okay. Because God's given me this thing. I'm going to hold on to it for now. and trust that he has something better. If he doesn't, it's okay. Remember, God's sovereign. He knows what he's doing. But it's that mercy that we hold on to that gets us through that. It's that mercy that we believe in and we trust in that'll get us down that road. If I got the worship team come back up.